This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, covering much of central Illinois. We're going to have a great show for you today. Remember, our show is brought to you by you, and we depend on you to operate this station and bring EWTN to you and also our local programming. So if you'd like to make a donation, we certainly could use it. We are also in the process of trying to expand our area and our station, and our ability to do that, again, will depend on you. So any donation you could make, we would greatly appreciate it. And you can go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. If you'd like to contact the station by phone, you can call us at 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, today, and we are going to talk a little bit more about Pope Francis's motu proprio. We're going to talk a little bit about the Latin Mass, and we're going to talk about traditionis custodes, guardians of tradition, in relation to the Latin Mass, and that'll be our topic today, and it's a pretty controversial topic that's going on. We will do a little bit of reading from an article by Diane Montana that appeared in the August 15th edition of The Remnant, and it's an interview with Bishop Athanasius Schneider, who is a bishop in Kazakhstan, and we'll go a little bit more into that. But before we start talking about the motu proprio and the Latin Mass itself, I'm going to turn this over to my wife, Lynn, and she's going to talk a little bit about the Latin Mass itself, the origins, how we got it, and some of the liturgy and so forth of the Latin Mass. So I'll turn it over, and go ahead, Lynn.
Okay. I want to read you from the Catholic Catechism under section 4, Celebration of Christian Ministries, the Mass of All Ages. This is what St. Justin Martyr wrote to the pagan emperor Antoninus Pius. That was 138 to 161. This was written about year 155. He explained what Christians did. So this is early on, year 155 or so. It's right after Christ died. The apostles were gone by then, but these were fathers of the church that had worked with the apostles. On the day that we call the Day of the Sun, all who dwell in the city or country gather in the same place. The memoirs of the apostles and writings of the prophets are read as much as time permits. When the reader has finished, he also presides over the gathered admonishments and challenges them to imitate those beautiful things that were said in the readings. Then they all rise together and offer prayers for ourselves and for all others, wherever they may be, so that they may be found righteous by our life and actions, faithful to the commandments, so as to obtain eternal salvation. When the prayers are concluded, we exchange the kiss of peace. Then someone brings bread and a cup of water and wine mixed together to him who presides over the brethren. He takes them, offers praise, glory to the Father of the universe, through the name of the Son of the Holy Spirit. And for a considerable time, he gives thanks in Greek that we have been judged worthily of these gifts it's all familiar to any Catholic that goes to Mass. You should be able to follow. You do follow it. When he who presides has given thanks and people have responded, those whom we call deacons give to those presents the Eucharistic bread and wine and water after they have been consecrated. And they are sent then from the place of where the service was, the Mass was. The consecrated hosts are also taken out to those that were not able to be there. Okay, that's from the year 155. Go back to that. That doesn't have a lot to do with the Latin, but that's the basic form of a Mass. That's the formula. And it is followed to this day. So, what we're talking about today is the Latin Mass. And the term Latin Mass is frequently used to denote the Tridentine Mass. That is the Roman Rite liturgy of the Mass celebrated in Latin in accordance with successive editions of the Roman Missal published between 1570 and 1962. In most countries, Tridentine Mass was celebrated only in Latin. However, there are exceptions. In early 17th century China, the Jesuit missionaries secured permission from Paul V to celebrate the Mass in Chinese in an effort to adapt their work to the Chinese cultural norms and conditions. In Dalmatia and parts of Istria, the liturgy was celebrated in the Church Slavonic. An authorized for use of this language was extended to some other Slavic regions between 1886 and 1935. There, Tridentine Mass was not synonymous with the Latin Mass. A further distancing between the concepts of the Tridentine Mass and the Latin Mass was brought about by the 1964 instruction on implementing the Constitution on Sacred Literature of the Second Vatican Council, which laid down what normally the epistle and gospel from the Mass of the day shall be read in the vernacular. Episcopal conferences were to decide with the consent of the Holy See that other parts, if any, of the Mass were to be celebrated in the vernacular. Permissions were thus granted from 1967 onwards to celebrate most of the Tridentine Mass in vernacular languages, including the canon. Following the apostolic letter in 2007, the term Latin Mass or traditional Latin Mass was often used to refer to the Tridentine Mass or extraordinary form of the Roman Rite Mass, which is celebrated exclusively in Latin. But the point is,
the Latin Mass goes back a long, long way.
Right. Since the 1500s, 1570s. Or so, it has been set in stone since the Council of Trent, actually. Wasn't it Trent? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was set down.
Right, and I think there were some reforms that were made to it. I'm not around 1000 A.D. maybe by Pope Pius V, I think also, if I'm getting that time right. But the point is that it certainly, you know, goes back a long way. And it's very sacred, you know, to a lot of people. So we wanted to establish that factor because there is, a really large controversy going on about the Latin Mass in the church and a lot of questions as to whether or not, you know, what the intentions of Francis are and why he is doing this. And it is controversial. There are some people who are sort of avoiding the subject, I think, in our even on EWTN and in the news and so forth itself, wanting to maybe put this somehow behind them. But I think it's something that we here in Catholic Spirit Radio and also on EWTN should discuss, because it incorporates a lot of people in the church who do attend the Latin Mass and take it very seriously, and as an alternative way of worshiping to the Novus Ordo Mass. And the church has to minister to all of its people. And I think that the subject should be brought up and talked about, because there certainly should be a say-so here. So,
right. The Latin Mass was codified in at the Council of Trent, which would have been around 1545, 1563.
Yeah.
So for 400 years, the Mass was set down in a published way, how it was to be done, even the movements of the priest.
Exactly. And of course, the Council of Trent was responding to two things. It was responding, of course, to the Protestant, what's called, the Reformation. The Protestant Reformation, but the Council of Trent was also a real Reformation in the Catholic Church itself. I mean, all huge bodies as big as the Catholic Church do need reform from time to time. Any of man's institutions, or any institutions of this earth, of course, are always flawed, and they always call for reform. And so the Council of Trent was addressing the Protestant Reformation, and it was also addressing problems in the Catholic Church itself. And the Latin Mass was being the principles of the Latin Mass and so forth were being laid down or furthered along those lines. And so it's a very important thing, going all the way back to a huge disturbance in the Catholic Church, a huge disturbance in society itself, a huge disturbance in the world. You know, the transformation of all of Christendom, which incorporated most of Europe, being torn apart, by the controversies in the church and the Protestant Reformation and that kind of thing. So it's a very important part of our history and needs to be addressed.
In 2007, Pope Benedict XVI expanded the use of the traditional Latin Mass in an apparent olive branch to traditionalists. Benedict said at that time that everyone has a place in the church. And that is right. We have no less than 6 liturgical rites in the Catholic Church. Keep that in mind. Because my stance is, why cannot the Latin Rite remain the Latin Rite with the Latin language use?
Well, we'll address that question, why can't it remain? And, what is the reason that is being given for the abrogation? And that's the word that Pope Francis used, the abrogation, to abrogate the traditional, the Latin Mass, the Tridentine Mass. And the question is that what are the reasons for this? And everybody on both sides, I'm sure, probably has ideas about what those reasons are. So we are going to get into, in the next segment, an article, again, by Diane Montana in the Remnant newspaper, the August 15th edition, if anybody wants to get that and read it, with Bishop Athanasius Schneider, Bishop of Kazakhstan, who is a very traditional-oriented, if you want to call that, or also Orthodox-oriented Catholic bishop, and has a disagreement over whether or not the Mass should be ended. And we want to get his side of it and bring his side of it in, and also maybe comment on some of the things that it seems the other side of the church is saying. So,
I want to say it here. The Latin Mass, the use of Latin in the church, in the Roman Rite, was used because it was a dead language. However, this dead language that never changed was picked up by the intelligentsia, I suppose, the educated people. They read in their studies Latin and Greek, they had to learn. And the feeling in the church was if we use Latin, since it can't change, it's a dead language, it would never change. And during the centuries that were coming, it would be a unifying thing, language for everybody in the church to basically know, be familiar with, to learn as a priest, and would be Catholics could go anywhere in the world and go to Mass and understand what was going on. So that's the reasons for the Latin language being used.
Well, at the time, you know, the Latin, up until a few hundred years ago, even Latin was far more important in the world than it is now. And, of course, back at the time when the Mass was first said in Latin, Latin was the universal educated language of anyone. I mean, anyone who could read and write, and there were not a whole lot of people that could read and write back during the Middle Ages and earlier than that. There wasn't a big need to because books were very, very expensive and, you know, there wasn't a lot of writing taking place relative to how much takes place today. So if you were able to read and write, you read and you wrote in Latin. Before that, of course, you read and you wrote in Greek. So Latin became the lingua franca of the world. Greek was the lingua franca of the world before that, meaning that the spoken language of all educated people in the world at one time was Greek, and then it became Latin. And so Latin was a very, very important language. And, of course, when the language became a dead language, it was able to preserve its meaning without, change.
Because
language changes when it's spoken in a vernacular and in spoken in contemporary times. In Latin, going out of existence as a spoken language became fixed. And so it was great for the church to use Latin because it would be accurately communicating everything to everyone in the same way without a lot of confusion. And one of the things, again, that's what we want to emphasize, is that the word Latin itself in the Latin Mass is not, a divisive factor. In fact, Latin, for all of the church's history, has been a unifying factor of the world. And so there is this idea that somehow the Latin Mass is divisive or became divisive, and that's why it needs to be curtailed. And it seems to go against the very idea of its name, Latin, meaning, unifying the whole church. So we're going to stop at this point and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the article by the interview by Diane Montana of Bishop Athanasius Schneider and see what his take is on the motu proprio that is curtailing the Latin Mass. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Catholic parishes in Central Illinois will soon begin their RCIA courses. RCIA, the Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults, is a course designed for anyone interested in learning more about the Catholic faith or living it more fully. Perhaps your spouse is Catholic and you have long considered entering the church. Maybe you are an active Catholic who has not received all the sacraments of Christian initiation. Perhaps you left the Catholic Church long ago and want your questions and concerns answered before returning. Maybe you're a non-Catholic Christian or not a Christian at all and want to know more about the Catholic Church and the one true God. If any of these circumstances is like your own, then RCIA is just what you need. RCIA classes typically include presentations, discussions, prayer, and fellowship. Contact a Catholic parish near you today for details and to register. Be certain to tell others, and do feel free to bring a friend.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're talking about the Latin Mass and Pope Francis's motu proprio concerning the Latin Mass. And the motu proprio, the entitled is Traditionis Custodes, meaning guardians of tradition, is the title of the motu proprio. And this is an interview with Bishop Athanasius Snyder of Kazakhstan. And it is an interview done by Diane Montana, and it appears in the newspaper The Remnant, and it's the August 15th edition. If you would like to get the full story of it on your own, you can get it there. You can go online probably and to The Remnant and get that article, or at least find out where you can get it. At any rate, it says here, in his first print interview since the release of Pope Francis's new decree restricting the traditional Latin Mass, Bishop Athanasius Snyder has said the document demeans a thousand-year-old liturgy of the Roman Rite, commits an injustice against Catholics who adhere to it, and creates a two-class society in the Church. And that's, you know, quite a statement to think about. And there are, I think, if you read the article, there are things that bear out what Bishop Snyder is saying. It says here, the privileged first class are those who adhere to the Reformed liturgy, Bishop Snyder asserts, and the second-class Catholics, who will now barely be tolerated, include a large number of Catholic families, children, young people, and priests who, through the traditional liturgy, have experienced with great spiritual benefits the reality and mystery of the Church. So Bishop Snyder is saying, in effect, that a lot of people are feeling somehow or another as if the Church is not allowing ministering to their needs and to their wishes and their desires in following a Mass that has, as my wife pointed out, been laid down through the Church for a long, long time and held as a very sacred part of our Church tradition, and certainly doesn't in any way contradict Scripture, doesn't contradict tradition, it doesn't contradict faith, or it doesn't contradict morals. And so to them, the question is why is this being done? And Bishop Snyder is here giving some of what his opinions he thinks why it's being done, and you know what its impact is. It says here, the bishop also contends that the astonishingly narrow-minded attitude and disparaging tone displayed, and this is what he considers to be in the motu proprio, an attitude and tone that is sort of disparaging. And he says, and accompanying letter not only stand in glaring contrast to the guiding principles of the current pontificate, but also fly in the face of the, let me look and see here, in the face of the conciliar claim of openness to diversity and rejection of liturgical uniformity. In other words, Bishop Snyder here is saying that Francis has emphasized a conciliar church, that is, a church that tries to take into consideration all of its members and understanding who they are, where they are, where they're coming from, and stand in their shoes and be pastoral in the sense of even sometimes when having to disagree with them, where they stand and where they're coming from, and you know, take into consideration as much as possible what can be done to administer to everybody. He says, in this exclusive interview, Bishop Athanasius Snyder, auxiliary of Astana, Kazakhstan, discusses his chief concerns about the document and addresses Pope Francis's claim that his chosen course of action is analogous to that taken by Pope St. Pius V. And Pope St. Pius V presided over some changes and reforms and in the Church. And Pope Francis sort of compares himself to making changes similar to what Pope Pius V did. And Bishop Snyder takes an issue with that, so we'll go on and see what he says. And he also defends Catholics who attend the traditional Mass against what he sees as the document's unjust accusations that they sow division and deny Vatican II. A considerable portion of young Catholic families and others who attend the traditional Mass keep away from discussions on Vatican II in ecclesiastical politics, the bishop maintains. They just want to worship God in the liturgical form to which God has touched and transforms their hearts and lives. So evidently, you know, in the motu proprio, of course, Francis is saying that the Latin Mass is causing division, and it's causing people to stand against what Vatican II has been trying to accomplish. And Bishop Snyder is saying, for the most part, that's not true, that the people that attend the Latin Mass are not actively against the Vatican II or spend much of their time trying to oppose it, but might mainly go to the Latin Mass because they get a lot out of it and see it as a more spiritual way of worshiping than they do the Novus Ordo Mass, and that, that there isn't the division that has been accused. They're not being divisive in the way that they seem to be being accused of. And this is Bishop Snyder's take on the issue, as opposed to what Francis says or implies in the motu proprio. So Bishop Snyder therefore encourages Pope Francis and those charged with implementing the new measures to heed the wise counsel of Gamaliel to those persecuting the early Christians. And we find this in Acts 5:34 to 5:39, I think. Mm-hmm. Lest they find themselves being opposed to God. You want to comment on that, Lynn? The Gamaliel and what was happening to the apostles at the time after Christ's death, when they were brought before the Sadducees, and Gamaliel, one of the teachers, spoke up on the side of the apostles.
Yes, the apostles were being hunted down and brought before the courts, the Jewish courts, and tried. They wanted to kill them all, to get rid of this idea that Christ had founded a church. And what's his name?
Gamaliel.
He was a Pharisee. He was well-schooled in the law. He taught Paul all he knew and was an extremely relevant Pharisee on the council. He cautioned the rest of the Jewish council to let things be, lest you offend God. You don't know where this is going. It could just peter out and it'd be gone. And yeah, you know, would have no blame in it. So let it be. If it's good, God wants it, it'll happen. If not, it won't.
Yeah, I think he sort of gave, it seems to be, you know, wise counsel. In other words, he's saying what these people are teaching will either stand on its own, and if it's the truth, and if it's not the truth, then it'll fade away on its own, and you would be better off waiting, you know, to see which way it will be. He said, I think that if you oppose it, and it is the truth, then your opposition will fail. And it's anyway, so you know it'll grow and continue anyway if you're wrong about it. And if you're right about it and it is a false teaching, then it will fall by itself, and it will be far more apparent, and the people will accept that a lot more readily when they see it fail on its own than if you just come out by decree. So I think Bishop Athanasius Snyder here is sort of advising that maybe this would have been a better course of action by the Pope and his advisors, rather than coming out against the Latin Mass and calling it divisive. So would you agree with that, Lynn?
Oh, definitely. In this case, especially, rather than cause division, let's go with the unity of the Latin.
And then Diane Montana goes on here, and she says, she asks Bishop Snyder, what are your general impressions of the motu proprio and of Pope Francis's accompanying letter to the bishops of the world, in which he explains his rationale for restricting the traditional Latin Mass? And Bishop Snyder responds, he says, in his programmatic apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, Pope Francis advocates certain attitudes which foster openness, approachability, readiness for dialogue, patience, and a warmth and welcome which is non-judgmental. Yet in reading the new motu proprio and accompanying letter, one has the opposite impression, namely, that the document as a whole exhibits a pastoral intolerance and even spiritual rigidity. The motu proprio and accompanying letter communicate a judgmental and unwelcoming spirit. So this is Bishop Athanasius Snyder's take on the tone and the message of the motu proprio, that Francis is not following his own advice in ministering to people, that there should be a lot more willingness to be tolerant, open, and to try and take the time to understand what's going on. That's one of the questions that I was going to ask you, Lynn, what you think. I've read, quite a bit about this and tried to, inform myself on it, and it's still going on. Did the Pope and the Magisterium spend enough time actually trying to find out what most bishops and most priests and so forth think about the traditional Latin Mass? Did they spend enough time trying to find out exactly what, the attitude of the people who attend the Latin Mass is? Or was this done much too quickly?
It was done rather quickly, and there were more than a few bishops that they never saw the letter or the questionnaire or whatever. They had never saw it. So if they hadn't seen it, how could they answer it?
Yeah, that's why I read about that too, and it makes one wonder. I mean, it was asserted that most of the bishops went along with the conclusions of Francis and, the council who addressed this question. But when you have a number of people that say they were never really consulted and didn't know a lot about it, it makes you wonder, was this a foregone conclusion? Was the idea that we're going to do this and we're not going to really have any ifs, ands, or maybes about it? We're not going to have any discussion?
Right. Was this maybe selected people that got it?
Yeah, we don't know, and I think this is something that should, in my opinion at any rate, should have been discussed and been made clear for a lot longer of a period and more time. And something like this is done, what appears to be at least, so quickly, it makes people wonder. It makes me wonder. I mean, was there some kind of a foregone conclusion here, and the action was done very quickly just to get it done and get it over with, because this is the way it was going to be regardless of what the information said? In other words, this was all the Pope's mind, and the bishops that acted with him, their minds were already made up, and it didn't make any difference what kind of information come in. They were going to do this anyway. It makes people suspicious along that line. So I don't think it was a good idea to act this quickly.
No. I might interject in here before the end of this segment. We are not saying the Pope does not have in the Magisterium that they don't have the power to do these things. What we are questioning is the wisdom of it being done now and the reasoning for it.
That's true. But the word, I agree with that. The Pope has the right in the magisterium, in some of the people, to decide on on liturgy and those kind of things. This isn't a question here at all of like correcting heresy or correct. Certainly the Latin Mass is in no way heretical. It's in no way against scripture, tradition, faith, morals, the teaching of the church, any of those things. So it's just a matter of a question here of a procedure of, what the liturgy is and that kind of thing. Nevertheless, the Latin Mass itself is a long-term tradition and has been held very, very sacred, by the Catholic Church for a long, long time. And so when you use the word abrogate, that word abrogate means end. It doesn't mean restrict. Now, the Pope restricted this, but he uses the word abrogate. And that means end. So what is the intention here? Is the intention just to restrict it, or his intention actually to try and snuff it out? And there would be then, I think, Lynn, a canonical question here if he would have that kind of authority. I mean, a pope is not supposed to contradict the dogmas and doctrines of the church, and certainly the Latin Mass could be considered a dogma or a doctrine of the church. And a restricting is one thing, and abrogating is another. And so that word, I think, opens this whole thing up to some kind of a canonical discussion.
Pandora's
as to how
box.
how far his authority goes.
Right.
So again, the idea is it's restricted, and the fact is there have been a lot of assertions from various clergy that a pope can't really abrogate, can't really end the Latin Mass, that it's not within his power to overturn it or forbid it, that he can advise and give restrictions and so forth. So that's something I think would have to be discussed.
Yes.
A little bit further than that. And, I think the people listening to our program and the people out there should know that. The Pope is just, he's not some kind of dictator who can do anything he wants. He's restricted by what came before. And I think we have to constantly go back to St. Paul and what he said. And it's really, really important. And I think Bishop Schneider holds this as being very important. And that is, Paul said, what I have received, I have handed on. And I think that is the Pope's, that was Peter's job, and that is the job of the Pope, and that is the job of the church itself. That is what tradition is, to hand on what was received from Jesus Christ. And that's what our sacred tradition is. What Jesus Christ taught to the apostles is sacred tradition. And then the apostles handed that on to their successors, which is the church. And the church has been handing it on ever since. And the whole job is to guard and preserve that tradition. So,
right. And it has become tradition. So it should be not abrogated, maybe, but there should be a place for it within these rites in the church.
And we're going to have to stop here and take a break. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You've heard of Dr. Ray Guarendi, famed psychologist, charming speaker, author, father of 10, and funny as can be. He's the host of the radio show The Doctor Is In and the TV program Living Right with Dr. Ray. We are thrilled to announce that he's coming to Bloomington. It's an evening that you won't want to miss. Thursday, October 7th, the social hour begins at 5. There's a cash bar and silent auction, followed by a buffet and Dr. Ray's keynote presentation, Standing Strong as a Parent and Grandparent. This spot-on Catholic psychologist doesn't pull any punches. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll learn, you'll enjoy. This charity event at Eastland Suites in Bloomington benefits Catholic Spirit Radio. Check out all the details at CatholicSpiritRadio.com and then make your reservations no later than September 27th. You might even choose to sit at Dr. Ray's table. For questions, call Carolyn, 309-830-4164.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio. You're listening to Being Catholic, right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking about Pope Francis's motu proprio concerning the Latin Mass. And we're going over an interview with Bishop Athanasius Snyder by Diane Montana, and some of the questions she's been asking him and his answers. And she goes on, she says to Bishop Snyder, "What are your greatest concerns about the new document?" And his answer, he says, "As a bishop, one of my chief concerns is that instead of fostering a greater unity by the coexistence of diverse authentic liturgical forms, the motu proprio creates a two-class society in the church, first-class Catholics and second-class Catholics." He goes on, he says, "The motu proprio and accompanying letter commit an injustice against all Catholics who adhere to the traditional liturgical form by accusing them of being divisive and of rejecting the Second Vatican Council. In fact, a considerable portion of those Catholics keep far away from doctrinal discussions regarding Vatican II, the new order of Mass, that is the Novus Ordo Missae, and other problems involving ecclesiastical politics." He goes, "Furthermore, the disparaging tone taken in these documents against the traditional liturgical form would lead any impartial observer to conclude that such arguments are merely a pretext and a ruse, and that something else is at play here." And again, I think he's referring there when he says pretext and a ruse, that some of these, this has been acted on very quickly, as Lynn pointed out, and you know, I commented. And it seems to a lot of people that this is a foregone conclusion, and some of these charges that the Latin Mass is divisive and so forth are really simply, you know, not substantiated. That you know, the Latin Mass could be taken. You could be taking people who maybe don't go to the Novus Ordo Mass as somehow being somewhat divisive. But it doesn't seem to me that there has been some kind of an attack on a church from the Latin Mass people, and it's been a preference of theirs. And Pope Benedict himself, and he's still living, gave his own motu proprio saying that there should be a place for the Latin Mass. And now Francis is contradicting that, saying that, Benedict didn't expect that it would be divisive this way. And the charge here by Bishop Snyder is that there's something wrong here, and it seems like this is simply being used as an excuse to get rid of the Latin Mass. So what's the real reason? And I want to turn to something here. Lynn, you looked up some of the lay reasons that people have given why they're against the Latin Mass. And I'm going to look this up.
The Pope, and I don't know if the whole Magisterium, the Curia, agree with him, but he seems to think that those that don't like him have congregated in the Latin Mass churches.
Here's something from an article that you gave me that you read from a publication called Controversy. And it's a woman who writes into
Conversations.
I'm sorry, not Controversy. I think that was another article or something. But at any rate, yeah, from a publication called Conversations, and it was written by, I think, a woman college professor. Was that the case?
Yes, she's professor of religious studies, College of the Holy Cross. It's Joanne M. Pierce, okay. The author.
Okay, and at any rate, or is that from the National Catholic Reporter?
No.
Okay, that's from that. At any rate, It seems to me that this woman's disagreement with the Latin Mass is a disagreement that the Latin Mass doesn't fit the secular liberal agenda. It doesn't seem to be a religious refutation of the Latin Mass, or a refutation that the Latin Mass is divisive in the sense of somehow being divisive in the church, causing some people to split off, let's say, from the business of the parish and go off to a Latin Mass instead of the regular parish Mass. Here's what she says, and people can judge for themselves. But the woman objects that, first of all, she calls the Latin Mass people that they go to the Latin Mass a cult. That somehow these people...
No, that's a different lady.
Okay. Well, this is the woman then from the National Catholic Reporter. I just want to get this clear.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. I know you gave me this, and this is the...
I gave you three or four.
Yeah, three or four. And this is the one I want to use. I think you jumped on here to a different one. But this is the one I want to use here. And the objection to the... I think this is coincides more with what Bishop Athanasius Schneider is saying here, that some of the things about the objection to the Latin Mass seem deceptive, seem to be just an excuse to end it. And here's what this woman says. She says that, first of all, that the Latin Mass is a cult. And then she says also the reason for this is that women somehow or another are being demeaned in the Latin Mass because they are wearing veils or, you know, mantillas. And I can't see that that's the case at all. These women aren't being forced to do this. They are wearing the mantillas and doing this because, you know, this is what they choose to do. And then she says that one of the, that a woman she knows went to the, it was not practicing her Catholicism for a long time. And when she came back, she went to the Latin Mass because that's what she was familiar with when she was younger, before she left the church. And she went to confession, and she was given a penance of saying the rosary every week for the rest of her life, and that this somehow was a penance that was too harsh. I don't know, you know, that that's the case, but the fact is that's what she says. Let's say that it was. But maybe the priest, depending on what the woman confessed, thought that saying a rosary once a week would be a very good thing and would be a positive thing.
Daily.
Right.
Daily rosary.
Or daily, okay, even a daily rosary. And then she said that the priest was facing away from the people and that this was somehow bad. But the fact is that this is how the church worshipped for a long, long time. The priest is leading the people going east into the new covenant, you know, as it's being coming down from heaven and touching the earth at the altar. And he is leading the people, and so his face is to God. And his, you know, you could turn this around and saying that if someone wanted to criticize the new Mass, that the priest is facing away from God and turning his back to God. That could be an accusation that could be made if you wanted to go tit for tat.
It's more man-centered.
Yeah. And she said that the Mass is more man-centered, the Latin Mass, that somehow the priest is too important. Well, the fact is priests are very, very important. And, you know, Jesus was the first priest, the primary priest, and Jesus was a man. And because Jesus is a man and the priests are standing, in fact, in for Jesus, this is why the priests have always been male. And we don't have priestesses in the Catholic Church or in Christianity as they do in other religions because of that reason, that the priest is a in persona Christi, a stand-in for Christ. And that's what Christ did when he handed things on. And we have to hand things on as they were given to us. And so, I mean, I don't think this is being taken into consideration. And then she says that the Mass, you know, is too formal. Well, there's nothing wrong with being formal. A lot of people, maybe in our day and age, we need a little bit more formality. And then it's not accepting of her dress. She went to the Latin Mass and I guess was dressed in a more modish clothes. You think you were mentioning to me
leggings
and tight fitting things and
sweater.
And I would agree that I don't think those are really appropriate in attending mass. That more formal wear is far more appropriate. And then again, saying that that the wine, she said, is, you know, the people only get the bread and the wine is only for the priest. I don't think there's any rule in the Latin Mass that that people can't have wine. It's just that, again, even in the Novus Ordo Mass, most of the time, a lot of times in a lot of parishes and places, only bread can be offered. We get everything, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the bread as well as in the wine. So you don't always have to have the wine, and it's easier to do than having both. So I don't think a lot of these criticisms are apropos. They certainly are not from a religious or doctrinal point of view. They seem to be more expressing the modernistic, secular, liberal view of how society ought to operate. And certainly the Catholic Mass is not something that should be somehow a representative society, of modernism or modern society. It should be representative of the Church. So those are some things I would take issue with. What do you think?
Oh, I think her whole thing is just a liberal's discontent.
Yeah, so
I really not anything to pay much attention to. There's no real basis of saying any of it other than she's working on her feelings.
But at any rate, the reason I digressed over to that is because, you know, Bishop Snyder here is saying that in his opinion, at least, he feels that, you know, some of these criticisms that Pope Francis is giving about the divisiveness of the Latin Mass, and that so many bishops and priests prefer to, you know, end the Latin Mass or restrict the Latin Mass, he is saying that, you know, a lot of this is simply asserted and really hasn't been laid out as evidence. And this makes him suspicious there may be other reasons for the ending of the Latin Mass. And that's why I brought this in. And are those reasons really simply that so much of modernism has crept into the Church and modern thinking and modern society that somehow the Church should be a representative of modern liberal thought and modern liberal thinking and modern liberal behavior in society itself? And somehow if the Latin Mass doesn't conform to that secular society, that it should be gotten rid of. So those are, you know, questions I think that should be brought up.
Yes, because they, this woman believes it makes it a cult, the Latin Mass, a cultage.
Exactly. It seems to me that, you know, that there could be the charge.
And they don't really want other people joining in. That's not true.
But it seems to me, again, that it could be the charge that the whole thing is that anything that doesn't conform to modern, secular, liberal behavior, whether it's in the Church or out of the Church, somehow or another should be gotten rid of. And so if that's the case, then that is a entirely different principle than is being enunciated for abrogating or restricting the Latin Mass. And that is something that certainly should be discussed and brought up. And we should certainly hear from the other side, Pope Francis and the people who want to abrogate the Latin Mass, the restrictions, a little more evidence as to why exactly they're doing this. If these are suspicions on the part of Bishop Snyder, and there certainly are suspicions on the part of a lot of people in the Church, even people that don't go to the Latin Mass, and I think it's something that needs to be addressed and answered. It shouldn't be just taken for granted that somehow the Latin Mass is being opposed simply because in and of itself, it's somehow divisive. So we'll go on here. It says, again, the question to Bishop Snyder here is, What has been your impression thus far of the implementation of Traditionis Custodes? And he says, within a few short days, diocesan bishops and even an entire bishops' conference have already begun a systemic suppression of any celebration of the traditional form of the Holy Mass. These new liturgy inquisitors, is the name he used, that's pretty strong, but have displayed an astonishingly rigid clericalism similar to that described and lamented by Pope Francis when he said, there is that spirit of clericalism in the church which one feels. The clerics feel themselves superior. The clerics turn away from the people. The clerics always say, this should be done like this, and this should be done like that, and this should be done like this, and so forth, and everything should be their way. So, in other words, Bishop Snyder here is saying that it seems in this case, the Pope is going against his own advice in other situations. And I think this is making a lot of people, and myself included, think that is there some kind of a double standard here? That if things are going along what we would call the liberal progression in the church, then that is open and broad-minded and pastoral and caring and putting ourselves in the place of other people. But if something is going in a different direction than that, then somehow all of those things, though that broad-mindedness, no longer applies, and that it's the opposite way, that the people going in a different direction, they are the ones that somehow are rigid and somehow are divisive and somehow, you know, going in the wrong direction. So it makes you a little bit suspicious here. These things are brought up by people, and I think they're legitimate questions and they need to be addressed. Is there something more going on here? So we're going to have to stop here in this session. We're going to talk more about this next week and go on a little bit more with this interview and bring in a little bit more questions and things of our own that go back to some of the tradition of the Latin Mass itself. And I think it's sort of like a harbinger, what's going on here, of trends that are going on in our church and that parallel a lot of the things that are going on in our modern society as well. So I think it's something we need to take up. We'll come back and do that next week. In the meantime, God bless everybody out there.
And pray for our cardinals and pope.
Pray for our pope. Pray for our cardinals.
Our church.
In our church. And there is a division here. And the church is already, I think because of modern society itself, has divisions in it. And we need to, if Francis wants unity, I certainly would agree with him on that. And we need to somehow or another explore these things and see if we can establish a unity that we so desperately need, and also a unity in our own modern society that's going on. So we'll say our prayer. Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.